There's a great deal to be said about each of these paths and the way in which they operate, which we'll have to save for another time, just so that you should know where in Kabbalistic astrology the letters go and where the astrological signs go. And you know, of course, where the astrological signs go, so too must go the cards of the Tarot Major Arcana. However, here's where something changes. This is a description of the way in which the three systems of mothers, doubles, and simple letters show themselves in the Tree of Life as the way in which the world is held together and constructed. You now know that. However, it does not actually describe the way we see the paths done in the Tree of Life in modern tarot, nor does it describe the order that we're used to seeing tarot in. Tarot doesn't divide the trumps up into mothers, doubles, and singles or simples in terms of their order. They're all over the place. So something else has to be done. What happens is that when tarot came along, and each of these letters and astrological attributions had to be applied to the order of the majors, it turns out that the majors already had an order. For a variety of reasons, over a period of time, purely historically, the imagery of tarot had arranged itself in a certain order which had become fairly fixed by the middle of the 17th century. With the Marseille deck, pretty much all of the earlier competing systems of ordering had been fixed. And so now the time had come to attach this fixed order of images and names to the fixed order of the letters and planets and the astrological signs. So that was done, and when they did it, they turned the Hebrew alphabet back from a series of separate groupings into a single linear development. So the letters followed each other, Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, etc., without regard for whether they were simple, mother, or double. They became a linear system again. And so the reintroduction of tarot into that symbol system reaccomplished the integration of the letters. And that means that they have different positions on the tree than the one I just gave you. The one I just gave you is pure, simple Hebrew Kabbalah, without regard to tarot, doesn't care about tarot one little bit. Once you get into tarot, and the order is changed into a linear order, then the paths become different, and they become the paths that we're used to when we're dealing with esoteric tarot. And those of you who are familiar with where the paths go in esoteric tarot, you will know what I'm talking about. You'll know that the tree does not line itself up quite this way.
Well, I've never really seen it done this way. I put in the signs and the cards, so I get a feel for that. Tarot is so based on Kabbalah. Why isn't it consistent? Why didn't it consistently follow this in terms of the paths? I don't understand.
Because you're talking about two quite different universes that came together.
Correct.
Originally, Kabbalah...
I mean, I understand that.
Yeah, tarot was not Kabbalah to begin with. Tarot was a whole separate symbol system.
Yeah, but it's like they're twisting Kabbalah to make it work for them, and the order, it was never fixed.
In a way, it's something like making a cow eat meat. Either way, basically what you've got are two systems that don't actually come from the same place, express the same things, or go in the same way.
Essentially, you're saying it's been cannibalized.
It's not been cannibalized. There has been a forced marriage made. But you know what? Even in forced marriages, even in arranged marriages, it ultimately sometimes works out. Sometimes in arranged marriages, the couple actually ends up loving each other.
Oh, no question about it.
So that's basically what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
Tarot is not Kabbalah. Kabbalah is not tarot. However, the connection between them was seen by a few visionary esotericists in the late 18th and beginning 19th centuries. And from that time on, once the marriage had been arranged and performed, it was discovered that the two couldn't live without each other.
I agree, they cannot. But I just don't understand why this was changed rather than that.
Well, this was changed because the tarot trumps are a linear order.
Big deal. I mean, once you shuffle, they're no longer linear.
Yes, I know, but the symbol system is linear. In other words, just like, for example, when you work
with
an
alphabet. You're saying the fool's journey, it has to be the fool's journey?
Yes.
Okay.
When you have an alphabet, There's A, B, C, D, E, F, G, etc. Now, right after A comes B, and right after B comes C, and it doesn't make any difference how many different words you write with it, where the letters are all jumbled up. The alphabet itself has an order, and the order is linear. Even though the English alphabet contains vowels and consonants, and the consonants are divided into various kinds of linguistic groups, the order of the alphabet is linear. And that's what happened here. The order of the majors is linear, and also the order of the Hebrew alphabet is linear. When I first showed you the Hebrew alphabet, that too was linear in exactly the same way, and you could not see, and nor can you see to begin with. Without the tree of life, you would not know about the mothers, the doubles, and the singles. You wouldn't know what to do with them. They're all jumbled up in the order of the Hebrew alphabet too. So what they did was they took the idea of an alphabet. They made the trumps of the major arcana into an alphabet with a set order matching the order of the Hebrew letters. And then inside of that linear order, they understood, they came to understand, and they came to use the astrology that went with it. It's perfectly consistent.
I haven't gone through the whole thing, but just looking at Hierophant Emperor being next to Keter makes more sense to me than Fool and Magician.
Well, that may very well be. And I'm not denying that there are ways in which different organizations of these things could seem to make, at least on the surface, more sense.
I haven't gotten any further than that.
But yeah, well, yeah. It's something to play with, and I can tell you an awful lot of people play with it.
A lot of people do know that.
It's a dynamic system, which means that it doesn't stay still.
I never thought I would be playing with it, but, you know, it's
anybody with a brain who likes puzzles, anybody who likes system, anybody whose mind is organized and systematic, is going to wish for a stable, unmoving, fixed, and true system that can always be depended on, like 1 plus 1 always equals 2, no matter who does it or what system you're using.
I'm not going to buy that, but...
Okay. Well, this is one of those things like that. The systems have to be looked at from different perspectives in order to make sense. And what you're doing is taking the different perspectives and their manifestation in the form of letters and signs and numbers and images, and shifting them as you need to shift them to accomplish different purposes. Now you know the reason why the astrological signs are done the way they are, why the astrology of the Tarot Major Arcana is connected in this particular way, why Venus is connected with the Empress. And the reason why Venus is connected with the Empress is simply that it's the fourth card in the Major Arcana. And the fourth card in the Major Arcana is connected with the fourth letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which is in turn connected with Venus. It's really simple. But very few people know that. Even if they knew that fact, unless they understood the reasoning, the function, the purpose that these paths serve on the Tree of Life, they still wouldn't get it. If they didn't understand that the world is maintained, held together, stabilized, and given rhyme and reason by these paths crossing and crisscrossing each other in this particular way, they would not understand. And that's one of the reasons why the Western form of astrology is not altogether useful here. So, for example, if you have birth cards, and you have the astrology that goes with the birth cards, and you try to apply the astrology of the birth cards to your personality, and if you were to say, like Cynthia, you're a Tower Chariot, and if you were to apply Mars and Cancer, you would find that it's probably quite different than the sun sign in which you were born in.
Yeah, which is Taurus.
Right. So you might very well, over the years, have come to understand yourself in terms of Western astrology, in terms of Taurus and rising signs and ascendants and mid-heavens and moon signs.
Yeah, never bought it, as a matter of fact. But
some people do, though. Quite a few people do find that, and they find that it's a little confusing when they try to apply the astrology of tarot to their birth conditions, because the astrology of tarot will actually describe certain qualities of themselves, but it doesn't describe them all, and they can't quite figure it out, and they seem to need the Western astrology, in addition to the tarot astrology, to cover all the bases. But the fact is that the tarot astrology doesn't talk about, isn't interested in, essentially, your personality and your queer quirks as a personality.
Well, that didn't come into being, I think, until the Renaissance.
Well, the history of astrology is complex, and I'm not going to try and get into that now, but I want you to be aware, primarily, that tarot astrology is not in itself interested in personality. And those people who use it to describe their personality can accomplish some interesting things with it, but not an awful lot. And I just want you to be aware of why that's so. It's a different system. It has different purposes. If you were going to describe the path that you yourself needed to take through life, if you were going to describe how you could make your own spiritual journey, regardless of your personality, then your birth cards and the astrology that's connected with them would make an awful lot more sense. Okay, let me find out if there are any comments from others of you. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a moment at this point to go down the list of people in class and get a quick sense from each of you of what you feel about this, how it feels to you as a system, and whether or not it makes any sense, and whether or not it explains anything you didn't know before. So I'll call on you one at a time. Kel, how does this feel to you, this whole thing? Does it make any sense?
Yeah, well, it does now. I have a sense of relief. The tree holding together makes more sense to me now that way. It works. And I am relieved to discover that there's no need for me to try to make the astrology work.
Yes, you're relieved from that burden. Yes,
well, you know, I gave up a long time ago on that and just thought, what the heck, but now I have an excuse. It's so much happier for me.
I'm delighted to hear it. Good for you. That's one of the primary things here. It actually allows you to make sense out of things, which is our purpose. Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Peg, how does all this feel to you?
Well, actually, I came in late, so I'm just getting caught up, and it took me a while. It's like my eyes were crossing, going, what, huh?
That's very funny. Yeah, I can imagine coming in the middle of this and trying to make sense of it.
Right, you're going across, you're drawing this line, and I'm saying, fire? Fool? No.
Right.
So I can hardly wait till Ruth Ann does the online thing, and I can listen to it 20 times very slowly.
Okay, well, actually, by the way,
it's
an interesting point that you make. If a person comes into this without being properly prepared, if a person approaches this without being systematic and without having a base of knowledge, the attribution system is not going to seem to make a lot of sense. If you try to figure it out from the middle instead of starting at the base, it doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. It's really confusing. And that's one of the things that tarot people are prone to. They come into the middle of things that were established 100, 200 years ago, never having had it explained to them, it doesn't make a lot of sense to look at. And they're just in the position that you're in.
I was trying to actually run the paths across, and I realized that you weren't talking about the paths. So
actually, I am talking about the paths. This is exactly the way the paths are done in the Sefer Yetzirah. They don't have the linear arrangement that we're used to in esoteric Kabbalah.
Right. Some of the cross paths don't exist in the tarot that we're used to.
That's right. It's
okay.
A different arrangement of the paths on the tree. Nevertheless, they are paths on the tree. They're understood to be paths on the tree. It's just a different understanding of the tree.
Okay.
Good. Thanks. Reese, your turn. You're the person, I think, in this particular group who probably has the most familiarity with this stuff. You've worked with it more than most of us have. You know of how many different ways there are to parse this particular piece of grammar. You know how many different ways there are to look at it. And you're also probably aware of the fact that even inside of Hebrew Kabbalah, there are differences of attribution system.
Oh, yes.
So what you have is an endless confusion of babbling voices, each one trying to make itself heard and each one trying to establish its own supremacy. The question I have for you is, does this particular approach seem to you to be integrated and sensible in its own right, leaving aside the fact that there are other ways of describing it?
Yes, it does. I'm having a blast with it.
Good. Just so long as a person who is familiar with various possibilities can look at one set of those possibilities properly explained and see that it holds water.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it does very much, because I work with both systems, which probably qualifies me for lunacy right there. But
right.
Yeah, it's great.
Good. Thank you.
And I'm very happy that you're doing it tonight.
I'm glad I am too. Good, good. Thank you. Cynthia, quickly, what's your sense of all this? Does it add anything to the knowledge that you've already had? You've been working with tarot for a good long time now.
Yes.
You're familiar with a good chunk of it, yeah.
I am so appreciative of this. But, of course, it leads into the whole dot issue. Will you be discussing that with us at some point?
I will definitely do that. Remind me to do that. Dot is a question that we haven't talked about. I particularly and specifically avoided that because it gets into issues we're not used to using in tarot. But, yeah, we'll talk
it's
about
very
it.
Very important.
Yes, it is, but not for tarot.
All right.
For tarot, it altogether doesn't exist, except if you are an esoteric practitioner and you're using tarot as a systematic spiritual system. Then, yes. But for readings, it has no purpose at all.
Well, I would appreciate it if you did anyway.
Okay,
it's
another
like
time.
Like this big, thank you.
Paul, how does this all sound to you?
Very interesting. I have one question.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the three elements. What happened to, like, the fourth element, Earth?
That is a combination of air, fire, and water. Earth is
okay.
understood to be a compound.
Okay.
Good. By the way, the fact that the world was created with three elements and not four, the fact that the tree divides itself into three columns, and the fact that it's divided into three triads, all of those different versions of three make it a perfect fit for the Trinity of Catholicism, which is one of the reasons why Catholicism borrowed a good chunk of Kabbalah for its own purposes in order to prove its own doctrine. This is a proof positive that even in the heart of Jewish theology, you can find their system of the Trinity validated. It's a really important point, and it covers a lot of ground and opens up a huge area for discussion, but good for you for pointing it out.
In that case, we won't mention the four-pointed chin.
No, we will not. No, we will not. Thank you very much. David, how does all this sound to you?
Well, it's been totally fascinating. I mean, I had no idea about this business with the mother letters and the double letters and the single letters and how they were placed upon the tree. And I'm just trying to figure how it's going to superimpose one tree on top of the other, the linear tree that I'm kind of used to. And how would I ever use this in a reading? I'm just it's like
we are going to do that very shortly. In fact, Ruth,
you know, it's like between four and five is strength in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I use that in terms of the air and the pool?
You shall see. It's really interesting. When it comes down to practical uses,
mm-hmm.
to a certain extent, you can completely disregard theory. Once the theory has established what's what and the attribution system has been locked down and nailed in place, then you can use the attribution system in a linear form without any reference at all, if you don't want to use it, to the system we just described. The linear system, which means that one letter follows another letter, one card follows another card, and one astrological attribution follows another without regard to their systematic distribution between 3, 7, and 12, you can do that and no harm done. And you'll see how we do that in a minute. Thanks, David. That's an interesting point, and we're going to deal with that right away. Charlotte? So how did all this sound to you? I mean, this is relatively new to you, I gather, from the beginning of class.
It is relatively new. I have some peripheral knowledge, I guess I'd say, of it, in terms of what you're talking about, of course. And the simplest way I know how to put this without giving a long spiel is I'm thinking about the alphabet, any alphabet, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And B follows A, C follows B, blah, blah, blah. But in the end, when I make a word, it doesn't matter. And I don't mean that it doesn't matter in terms of knowledge. If I didn't know the alphabet, I couldn't make any words, okay? But when I take them and I jumble them all up and I use them to make a word, then the fact that they follow each other makes no difference at all. Does that make any sense?
But what happens is when you're working with an alphabet, any alphabet, if you were a linguist, you would have to know the difference between vowels and consonants, and you'd have to know the difference between
right. Vowels
and consonants. And that's how you would compare languages. That's how you would compare symbol systems. That's how you would even compare cultures. So
right. Even
though the alphabet is linear and you need to know the order of the alphabet, when you're actually working with the symbol sets that are contained within it, the alphabet begins to break itself out into groups.
Right, and it goes all different directions, and it doesn't necessarily matter. Not that those things don't matter, because like you say, the base does matter, but in the end, when you're working with them and you do these magical things you do when you're working with them, the order, it just kind of falls into place for a certain... I don't know if I'm making any sense, but that's how I feel.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean, and it's an interesting point, and it's one that everyone has to get used to. This is what nobody basically knows until they're taught, how the simple linear system breaks down into groups and how those groups give this linear system meaning. Remember we talked at the beginning about the idea of astrology being the meaning of all those bits of rock floating up in the heavens, and this gives meaning to the alphabet, and it gives meaning to all sorts of things. The order of things, the measurable, knowable, reliable order of things, which stays fixed under all circumstances, has to be reorganized and reconceived in order to have meaning, and that's what we've done here. Thanks for that, Charlotte.
Even though I think it has order, I also think that it's only one order.
Yes,
I mean,
you're right.
In my world, it is only one of the many possibilities. The tree and the Kabbalah are only one aspect of things when there may be others as well.
There are indeed. Yeah. There are many, many. And once you get into that point, you're going totally philosophical on us. That's where we get into that. But I've got time right this second. What I want to do, actually, is turn us back to the practical in a moment. So thank you, Charlotte. Maris, how are you feeling? Are you beginning to feel a little woozy at the end of all of this?
No, actually, this is fascinating. I love it. I really do. I think the great thing about tarot that I love is the way it's connected to so many other things. It's not just isolated. Everything's interconnected and intertwined, and it's great. I love it.
I'm delighted to hear it. Again, the reason that this is so important is because meaning comes out of these intertwinings. That's why these things mean something instead of just being lists of things. So that's what it's for. Thanks, Maris. Farrell.
Hi.
So, speaking for all of those people who came to this knowing nothing about it to begin with, what's your feeling about all this now? Now you know something.
Well, I'm fascinated with this. I'm just kind of vibrating. I feel like a giant craniosacral vibration. All kinds of things went through me. I kept thinking, and I don't know why, about Lon Milo's Key to Solomon's Key while I was listening to all this. And I was also prompted when we were talking about the difference between the people who look for the measure of things as a form of security and then those who look for meaning, possibly for the freedom. And in my world, it's exactly the opposite. The flotation part of it is the security, and the measure is the point of reference that organizes my thoughts. I just kind of come at it in the opposite direction. Mm. I'm really glad that I started with this basis rather than starting in another way, since it's all new to me, and especially since I assumed that everyone probably knew this. And then when we went down and started asking everyone and found out that they actually had many different systems of understanding, this being one of them, perhaps the most ancient, maybe not, but I like it. At some point, I became a little confused. I think it was when they went from the point where you said tarot doesn't actually use these paths. And I believe it was Cynthia that said, why did they change it at this point? That's kind of where I was, too. I was thinking, all right, it was rock solid until we realized that this is not what everyone's been doing, and now we're going to shift it again. But when I listened for another maybe 15 minutes, I began, and then you talked about the triads and the left and right, the vertical pillars and the horizontal pillars and the 22 letters and brought it back to the very beginning of the class again. It firmed up for me and gelled nicely, and I'm looking forward to listening to the MP3.
Great. Thank you very much. You know that the main use of astrology in tarot readings is for timing. That's what it does best. When you want to know when something is going to happen, not what is going to happen, but when it's going to happen, the astrology is going to be able to give it to you. It'll give it to you by the sign, which will tell you what sign of the year, which gives you a basic time of the year that it applies. It will also give it to you in terms of the days of the week, and it will also give it to you in terms of the hours of the day. We didn't cover that yet. But let me do this with you for a moment. Let me ask if any one of you has a question that involves timing. Can any one of you think of something that you would like to know when something particular is going to happen?
Well, it's Farrell.
Yeah.
I do. I would like to know roughly when I might be able to expect the dynamic practitioners of Dallas to finally form into a cohesive action group. You know,
okay.
The people that are actually central coming together to start creating.
Okay, that's actually an easy one. So what we're going to do is find out when a group is going to cohere and begin to act as a group.
Right.
Apparently that has begun, but it hasn't solidified yet, right?
I would say that's correct.
Okay, so what I would like now is I would like one person. Let me pick somebody. Let me say David. What I would like you to do is I'd like you to shuffle this little deck of major arcana cards. And shuffle them face down. And then pick one. Any way you want. And when you picked it, turn it over and tell us what it is.
Well, I pull the tower.
The tower.
Mm-hmm.
The tower is one of the planets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the planets do not tell you a sign of the year. The planets actually can tell you something different. There are two things that the planets can do for you. They can either give you a day of the week, and I'll have to describe to you what the system is that gives you the day of the week. But Mars is connected with Tuesday. just to give you an idea. Do you know in French that the name for the day of the week Tuesday is Mardi?
I did. I must have heard it somewhere along the line.
Yeah, well, Mardi literally means Mars Day. Each one of the 7 days of the week is connected with one of the planets and is ruled by one of the planets. When you draw one of the cards that is connected with a double letter and is therefore a planet, you're going to be looking at a day of the week that is particularly propitious for whatever it is that you're looking for to happen. It's a day that is strong and important in the issue that you're discussing. So what we're talking about here, apparently, is not necessarily a time of a given year or a given month, not a time in a linear calendar so much as a style of influence, an actual time of the week. I would say that since Mars belongs to Tuesday, it belongs to an early time in the week. Not the earliest, it's not Sunday, it's not Monday, but it's the third day of the week. What you can look for there is the excitement that comes with the onset of Mars in the week. We're talking about Tuesdays being a particularly propitious time. We're talking about, in terms of your own sense, Farrell, of how long it might take, your own sense of overall timing. Is this something that in your mind will take years, months, days? The chances probably are that you will imagine this to take less than a year. Would I be right?
Oh, yeah.
So that would mean it wouldn't be years, so it would be within the compass of a year.
Easily.
The chances are that it would be not long away. If we were talking about a year from now, let's say that it's going to be done within a year, and here we are in late November, the end of November, when this class is being held, so certainly long before November of next year. If we were talking in terms of cycles of 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, where does Mars come in a cycle of 7? And as it turns out, and I'll show you how, Mars is the fourth card in the cycle of the planets. And therefore, if in a group of 7, it would be somewhere around the middle. So if you take the middle of the year, of 1 year from now, we're talking probably sometime in the late spring. I'll tell you now, I'm going to use this example as a way to get into the last part of our class. You know that the astrology of the signs is what it is. If we had picked, for example, the devil, which is Capricorn, you could say, okay, the time that this is going to happen will be in Capricorn, which is the end of December and the beginning of January. If we had picked, let's say, the chariot, we would have been talking about Cancer, which is the beginning of summer. It's really easy to use the major arcana to describe time periods when you're working with the signs. They tell you exactly when in the year it's going to happen. When you're working with the planets, you're talking about the influence of days, and the influence of sooner rather than later. A slightly different approach. It is both broader and narrower than the astrology of the signs. What I want you to do is to take out your last tree of life diagram. What I want you to do, first of all, if you know this by heart, good. If you don't, refer to your earlier tree of life diagrams. I want you to write the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in their proper places above the circle. Don't put them inside, but put them directly above. Do that now. I'm going to assume that it doesn't take very long to write in those 10 numbers, and I'm going to assume then that you have already done it. If you haven't, do it as we go. It shouldn't take you much longer. The planets are placed upon the tree in a certain order, and the order makes sense too. The number 1 is so primary that the planets have not yet been formed. The number 2 is the organization of the primal light and explosion of matter into the universe that happened in the number 1. In number 2, those begin to swirl and make dust and make a brilliant, coruscating, mother-of-pearl-like universe that has not yet settled down into planets and suns. But in the number 3, everything begins to coalesce. In the number 3, actual shapes begin to take shape. Things can be seen. Planets are made out of the primeval dust. In the number 3, we find the planet Saturn. Write down Saturn, inside the circle of the number 3. Saturn is the very first planet in the order of the planets. The planets are as fixed on the tree of life as the letters are. Saturn is the planet that rotates around the Earth the most slowly. It takes the longest time for Saturn to go around, and so it's placed as far out on the tree as you can get, as far away from us as possible. If the number 10 could be said to represent Earth, then the number three is as far away in the physical universe as you can get on the tree, and that puts Saturn in that position. In the number four, write Jupiter. Jupiter is the planet that is next slowest. It goes around the Earth a little bit faster than Saturn, and it's very far away. In the number five, put Mars. Mars is just a little bit closer than Jupiter and just a little bit faster. In number six, put the Sun. Remember that we're working with a geocentric universe in which the Sun is simply another planet observable in the sky. And the Sun, from that point of view, is not quite as far away and takes a little bit longer to go around the Earth or give the appearance of going around the Earth than Mars. The number seven is Venus. Even though Venus is in orbit closer to the Earth than Mercury, which comes in number eight, put Venus in number seven and Mercury in number eight. Do those two because they're interesting as a pair. Venus is closer to the Earth than Mercury, but Venus has a very large orbit. And Venus has a tendency to go around the Earth rather more slowly than Mercury. So because Venus gives the appearance of slowness, it comes before Mercury, even though Mercury is actually farther away from us. Mercury has a tight orbit around the Sun and is usually relatively stable in reference to the Earth, and its going around the Earth appears to be faster than Venus. So Venus comes first in seven, Mercury is then in eight. And the last planet is the Moon. The Moon is the closest to the Earth and goes the fastest around us. So the order of the planets is essentially in the order of observable speed of rotation around the Earth. Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, the Sun, Venus, Mercury, and the Moon. This is an order of planets that you're going to find working constantly when we get to the minor arcana, and it works in the major arcana in this way. Each one of the hours of the day, of the 24 hours of the day, is given a position on a seven-number cycle. There is a cycle of 7 hours that runs through a 24-hour day. From noon to 1 a.m. is the first hour. From 1 a.m. to 2 a.m. is the second hour, etc. There are seven such hours. And after the cycle of 7 hours is up at 7 a.m., a new cycle of 7 hours begins with 8 a.m. The cycle that begins from midnight to 1 is ruled on Sunday by the Sun. It's called Sunday for a reason. Just put down in a separate piece of paper that Sunday begins with the Sun. Put 1 a.m., Sun. Write down a column of numbers, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Those are the hours of the morning, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., etc. Let's say we start the week with Sunday, which was what we're used to doing. Sunday literally means the Sun. It's the day on which the first hour of the day is ruled by the Sun, and the Sun rules the day in toto. Now, if the Sun is at 1 a.m., what would 2 a.m. be? You know that in the order of the planets, what has to come next is Venus. If you look at the chart we just did, you'll see that Venus is in number 7, which comes after the number 6, which is where the Sun is. So Venus rules 2 a.m., the hour between 1 and 2. And after that comes Mars for 3 a.m., Moon for 4, Saturn for 5. When you get to the Moon, you come to the end of the cycle and you have to start at the beginning again. So after the Moon comes Saturn, and you start at the top again. So after the Moon in 4 a.m. comes Saturn in 5 a.m. And after Saturn, naturally, comes Jupiter in 6 and Mars in 7. And then we go on, 8, 9, 10 a.m., etc. It goes on. And every cycle of 7 repeats the first cycle of 7. Sun, Venus, Mercury, Moon, Saturn, Jupiter, Mars. That's the order of the seven planets starting on Sunday morning. As you know, there are 24 hours in a day. There are, therefore, 21 hours that are connected with three cycles of these seven. if you were to work it out, and we don't have time now, if we had a little bit more time, I would give you the entire list, but you can work it out for yourself. I'm going to tell you all this stuff now, although because we don't have the time for me to go over it carefully, it might be a bit confusing. But obviously, if you divide 7 into 24, you're going to have 3 left over. At the end of the day, at the end of Sunday, you'll find that the sun can be found at 10 p.m. After you've gone through 3 cycles, you'll find that the sun shows up at 10 p.m., which would mean that Mars would show up at 11 p.m., and Mercury would show up at midnight. And then, of course, we go on to Monday. And what comes after Mercury in the order of the planets? The moon. So 1 a.m. on Monday is the time of the moon, which is why Monday is called Monday, the day of the moon. So Monday begins with the moon, whereas Sunday began with the sun. And I can tell you, and you can figure it out for yourself later if you want to, that Wednesday at 1 a.m. begins with Mercury. It's easy to remember the names. For example, Monday is obvious in English, but Wednesday doesn't sound much like Mercury, except for the fact that in French, which keeps this particular tradition alive, Mercury is the name of Wednesday, Mercredi. Mercury is the ruler of Wednesday at 1 a.m. And if you follow the cycles along, you'll find that Thursday begins with Jupiter. From 12 to 1 a.m. on Thursday is Jupiter, which is jeudi in French. And Friday's 1 a.m. begins with Venus. And Venus is vendredi in French. So Friday is ruled by Venus. And the hours start with 1 a.m. and Venus. And finally, after the cycle of the hours is over with on Friday, you'll find that Saturday, 1 a.m., begins with Saturn. Saturday begins with Saturn. Saturday is Saturn's day. And after Saturn is done, after the day of Saturn is done, you'll find that Sunday begins with the sun again. A cycle of 7 hours running through a week of 24-hour days, and 7 of those days brings you back to the beginning. The whole cycle is completed in 7 days. The cycle of the planets is completed in 7 days, which recapitulates the 7 days of creation and the fact that everything was done in that amount of time. The cycles of the 7 planets repeat themselves over and over again throughout each day and throughout all the days of the week, and they turn around one complete cycle every 7 days. When you draw one of the planetary cards, like Venus, like the Empress, let's say, or like the Tower, which is Mars, what you're talking about is a day of the week. You're also talking about different hours of the day, depending on which day of the week it is. And you're also talking about where in the cycle of the planets it can be found. When you're talking about the days of the week, you begin with Sunday. If you want to think in terms of matching the planetary cycles to speed, how soon will something happen? It'll tell you exactly what day, but what day of what month, what are we talking about? But if you're talking about simply speed, how soon will something happen? Let's call the sun the quickest, since it's the beginning of Sunday, which is the beginning of our normal week. You can do this. There are other ways you can apply this. If you were talking about Thursday, if you were talking about Jupiter, which is the Wheel of Fortune, if you drew the Wheel of Fortune in answer to a timing question, you're looking at a card that takes you to a time of the week which is fairly late in the week, and which could then be understood to take place somewhat far away in terms of sooner or later. So you can grade the timing from very fast to very long and far away in 7 chunks, according to the planetary system. If you want to, you can look at Saturn as being the farthest away of all the planets, and the moon as being the closest. And when you draw one of the planetary cards, you can look at where it stands in the cycle of close and far from that perspective. There are different things you can do with it, and as a reader, you're entitled to pick whatever is most appropriate to the situation you find yourself in. But I want you to be aware that the 7 cards that are connected with the planets serve that particular function. The 3 elemental cards, the Fool, the Hangman, and Judgment, have a similar quality. Fire, which is very fast, can be called now. Air, which is a little bit quick but not immediate, could be called soon. And water, which is slow and passive, could be called later. You could call those now, soon, and later. And you can use those just exactly that way. And so the major arcana all have something to say about timing, yes.
If this is inappropriate, just let me know. But before the night is over, did you say you were going to fill in the parentheses near the different attributes?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
When you go back to your forms, at the top of the page it has the mother letters, the double letters, and it says the blank paths. The mother letters are the horizontal paths. The double letters are the vertical paths. And the simple letters are the diagonal paths. Thank you for reminding me of that. Guys, we have actually gone considerably over the amount of time that I think that we should have, so we really have to call it a night at this point. I have given you more than enough to think about for one evening, and we'll have a chance to talk next week. And I'll get a sense from you then of whether this stuff has integrated itself into your thinking by then. So thank you very, very much for having joined us in this and been patient and learned all of this stuff and not argued with me too much, which is wonderful because it's so easy to argue with this stuff. Thank you again for that, and we'll talk again next week.